The Shaggy Jenkins Show.
We have to make Russia great again.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome to it. Today, I'll be talking a little bit about everybody's favorite gateway drug. No, not Twinkies. And no, not marijuana. Actually, yes, marijuana. I should have said the favorite gateway drug of America is opioids, but that's a whole different show. We'll be getting into that with one of our correspondents out of California. Before I introduce him, introduce me. Hi, I'm Shaggy. This is my show. Find it at ShaggyJenkins.com or wherever fine social media is served at Shaggy Live. Joining me all the way from the 11th largest economy in the world, please welcome Mr. Friday Love.
How goes it, kind sir?
It has been a while. How's things?
Things are well. It's a pleasure to be back, and I'm really happy to get things started.
Well, I figured that this is the perfect story to bring you back in on for one reason, because it deals with something that you've already wrestled with in California a long, long time ago, and we in Hawaii wrestled with somewhere back in the 1990s. It has to deal with marijuana and legalization. The latest state that has added itself to the bill of states that are full legal, and as a matter of fact, is the first state in the nation to fully legalize adult use cannabis, is, drumroll please, Illinois?
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Okay, first off, how are you guys in California going to let Illinois scoop you?
You know, obviously they got some movers and shakers out there. We played a good game. Coach told us what to do and we did it.
I do kind of feel like this is some Monday morning quarterbacking required, but let's explain. Their current governor, who's by the name of Pritzker, he actually ran on an initiative that he was going to go for full legalization of adult use cannabis in his state. Overwhelmingly, big surprise, he won. And now that bill has been signed into law. Here's the flip side, though. In that law, and I'm going to ask you how you feel about this, Mr. Love. In that law, there is no sort of, shall we say, grandfathering of the clause. So people that were arrested under old drug statute, and even some that were arrested under the three strikes you're out statutes, those people are still going to be in jail as the law is already on the books. Look, I'm going to ask a very honest question. With these states that are legalizing, do you see a kind of a consideration from, I don't know, do we say reading the temperature of the room and knowing that we still have a lot of people in jail for these crimes that we're now just saying, hey, go out and build businesses on this. Is anybody else seeing the irony like that?
I absolutely see the irony like that. I also see that it's, again, something that's being built on the backs of people who are disenfranchised, because I feel like a lot of the movement, a lot of the people who put in the footwork to make marijuana illegal are the people who are now in jail for it and aren't going to be able to benefit in the way that a lot of other people are benefiting right now, like tons and tons of people.
This is one of those memes that I've seen pass back and forth over the internet time and time and time again, and I'm waiting for Illinois to show its face on it, but the meme always shows white people opening up these grandiose marijuana boutiques, and then it juxtapositions it with a minority in a jail cell for the exact same thing. So I'm going to go go for it.
No, no, I was just going to say that's just how it plays out. I love that someone takes the short bit of time that it takes to put together the meme so people can see it without having to read about it or function in their mind in any way. They just put it in plain Jane for them.
Well, you know, there's also the other meme going around that's attributed to Dave Chappelle that says, when we realize that we're letting white people profit for paying their bills with weed is the exact same thing that we lock black people up for, which was paying their bills with weed.
Mm-hmm.
that quote, that little thing is kind of, okay, painfully true when it comes to this wave of legislation that's out. Everybody is real quick to jump on the marijuana legalization bandwagon, but when it comes to the previous marijuana prosecutions and trials and people still incarcerated, we're just kind of like, yeah, in the dark. Why is that?
Mostly because, you know, there's no profit in that. There is no immediate money to be made in letting all these people go or diminishing their cases or expunging their records based on the fact that it's now legal. You would also think that, like, in the time period that we live in, that a good employer, someone who's forward thinking, like, you know, let's say the Oogles and Basebooks of the world, might also be forward thinking enough to think, oh, if anybody applies here and they've been convicted of a marijuana charge, they haven't ever been convicted.
Hmm. You know, this is the thing, because in state after state after state, especially when it comes to raw math and an educated police force, most of the time you'll notice that police officers are very lax in enforcing marijuana regulation laws. The reason why is because it is kind of a drain on the judicial system. Millions.
It's also partially because of the contact time.
Oh, like, man, I was going to come over here and be a jerk, but all of a sudden I just feel like listening to fish.
And I just want to comment on what you said earlier. I have to admit, I think you actually did like a Freudian slip. So marijuana is a gateway drug to Twinkies. You're absolutely right.
Well, that's what the science has said. And that's one of the things that we wish we could get more science on. But because we have this, you know, Schedule 1 narcotic, which it is absolutely positively not. Yeah, because we have this Schedule 1 narcotic designation. Places, especially places like my state, Hawaii, that has been medical marijuana since 1996, even states like us, we can't invest public dollars in researching the actual cost benefits of marijuana, because at the federal level, that Schedule 1 does not permit us to study it, not without jumping through some amazing hoops that nobody's ever seemed to get through. Am I right?
No. Well, you're not getting through hoops that you're not meant to jump through.
Correct. And it seems like one of those hoops is always the racial barrier, because it seemed like for decades and decades and decades, and I bring up the former president that was almost thrown out of office because of the crazy scandalous stuff he did. When it comes to Richard Nixon, he specifically criminalized marijuana and heroin because he knew those substances were higher in minority communities than they were in the white middle class Americans. So,
and those are skewed views anyway. Even though that information wasn't factual, that's what he based it on. I can tell you right now, all across the world, people everywhere are going to get their buzz on, and they all get their buzz on in the same amounts.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but just last week we had a Chinese excavation team actually extract some remains 35,000 years old of people having habitual use of cannabis.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, plus there's the biblical references in the Book of Solomon, and there's a whole thing called Rastafarianism, which if you don't know about it, you should probably look it up.
Yeah, just take a gander.
Okay, but with all of that said and done, America has been very leave it to beaverish as far as our approach to the big, bad, dirty reefers. But then, all of a sudden, it started to look just a wee bit profitable. Profitable.
No, someone sat down with a calculator, and when those 11 zeros came up, they were like, now that's actual money.
Yeah, and that's not a very big exaggeration of the figure. About 11 zeros is correct if you're looking at the national predicted market for it. But even in statewide markets, they've seen millions of dollars of returns in revenues from taxes that was generated on legalization or decriminalization of cannabis products. Now, with Illinois going full decriminalized adult use cannabis, not medical, not recreational, just, you know what? It's yours. If you're an adult, you can buy it just like cigarettes and alcohol. Can this possibly reset America's moral compass on marijuana?
I don't think you could reset it. I think there's a possibility that, like a lot of things, you know, like when there's really great change, I think this is going to bring some other people on board. It might even bring a lot of people on board. There's still going to be a large constituency of people, and they're old and they're tired and they have old, you know, thought patterns, but they're just not going to be able to get off the boat that that's bad and you can't do that.
This is the thing, too, because as much as we talk about the whole, oh, my God, I can't believe what Illinois has done and which state will be the next to do it. I'm looking at you, Hawaii. We had 4 attempts in the last session, by the way.
Wow.
4 attempts. Each one getting closer than the other one, but that's another show altogether. So I can dream, but I am.
You can.
Yeah, I am definitely not changing weather patterns with Chris Bass, though, in Chicago.
Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive.
Oh, but this is the thing. One of the things that all of these laws need to consider, because Illinois didn't, and in places like Colorado, they're still wrestling with the problem. In California, they have a radical solution of saying, hey, you know what? Expunge the records completely. Just if you are arrested on marijuana and only marijuana, no violent crime, no breaking, no, just marijuana, we want you out of our system. That's their proposal, is just expunge and release.
Mm-hmm.
So other states need to kind of consider, though, and that's what the whole California debate has brought up and the new Illinois law has brought up. Should we make it illegal in legislation that decriminalizes or legalizes marijuana that from the signing of that bill forward, it is now illegal to continue to incarcerate people for marijuana charges that were previously on the books? Is that a smart legislative move?
That's not just smart. That's forward thinking. That's conscious. That's the kind of move that would, I think, would make America great again.
Ooh. Oh, God, did you just have a... No, I'm not going to even... The thing is, though, is that it is kind of one of those things that would make these laws a lot better than they currently are. See, yeah. Here's the thing.
It would make it a social movement as well as a political movement and a monetary movement.
And with a country that is just now, 150 years late, but just now getting into this, hey, let's talk about, very honestly and very serious, setting up a committee to analyze what it would take to actually pay back reparations in this country. In a country that has that kind of climate right now, that thinks both forward of our mm-hmm. society, and
yes.
backwards of the ills that we have created amongst ourselves and kind of need to heal from. With this kind of environment, wouldn't it make sense that somebody would have raised their hand in the back of the class during any one of these legislative sessions and said, guys, what about the hundreds of thousands of dollars that our state spends every single year to house old marijuana convictions? If we're going to just...
For
it.
No, I was just going to say, so if they're going to, if we're going to shake a leg like that, I love the progressive thinking you're talking about and the possibility of doing something along the lines of, say, if it costs $22,000 a year to keep a person incarcerated who was in for 4.5 pounds of weed from 86, those exact same dollar amounts will now be put towards education, reparations. You can go to, if you're a person of color, and I mean literally, well, I'll even let the one drop rule run. How about that? Okay, that means practically everyone can ride this train in. You get to go to community college for nothing, dude. If you can prove any sort of ancestry, we don't care. I'm not trying to hold anybody back. Let's take that money from the people who used to be in jail for weed and put it directly towards reparations for folks who need to be educated in whatever it is, vocational school, community college, whatever it is, and move people forward with that money rather than keeping people incarcerated with it.
Well, the thing is, too, is that when you say something like that, people will be like, oh, Friday Love is a very radical person. Look at him. He's wanting to give. He's like the Robin Hood of marijuana. He wants marijuana to pay for education. And everybody knows that won't work because they'll be too stoned eating Cheetos to be educated. okay,
hilarious.
Yeah, you know, it's a good little stereotype to punch in there. So I'll throw that one in for the people on the right side of the aisle. Yes, we will be too busy with munchies not to get educated for free, which is something we haven't been able to do in this country ever. So
yes.
Well, actually, you can. Grades K through 12 are subsidized by the state and by your county. Why does it seem like a stretch of an imagination that we just pay for 4 extra years of school? I do not know. But when it comes to these funds, you're saying something that a lot of people would hear and they would be like angry and upset at you because they would say, Friday Love, how dare you get out there and throw this whole big thing about we're going to take marijuana money, the tax revenues created, and we're going to shift it immediately into a purpose. We're needing this marijuana legislation to fill our coffers with capital investment funds for roadway projects and school and blah, blah, blah. And they'll go through the whole rigmarole and what we like to call port of stuff they would want to do with that money.
And I'm trying to create, like, this is my new analogy for this is called center car. So where we are right now is the center car of a train. The reparations and the past injustices are the backside of the train, and the conscious forward movement of using money to better folks or to make change or to keep in mind that we don't make the same mistakes again. That's the whole train, and that's what I want to do is, like, I want to start a center car movement where everything we do has 5 cars ahead of us and 5 cars behind us, and we're all moving forward at the same time.
Yeah, but eventually people would be like, what happens when you run out of cars? and to those people, I would say, it's an analogy, Jesus. But also, here's the thing. When people hear that plan, they hear, you're going to take all of the revenues that marijuana and cannabis products could generate, and you're going to shift that over immediately into a single-use fund. Where is the value of legislation like this for non-cannabis users? And this is what you say. Because when we talk about this problem, people tend to forget it's a dual issue. It's not just an issue of on the streets. It's literally in the prison sheets.
Yes.
So you would have to go to those people and say, okay, once again, let's look through raw numbers. And I think the national, well, I know the average here in Hawaii is about $57,000 per year per inmate. Across the country, I think it averages out around to about $33,000 per inmate per jail cell in these prisons. So it is rather expensive to keep these people incarcerated. Now, if you're a nonviolent offender that was only arrested on marijuana charges, that means that something that has already been made legal for everybody else, there is people creating business license, white, upwardly mobile and affluent people, creating businesses out of this enterprise that you are still serving time for when no law, in fact, exists to keep you there. So we are literally throwing our money away at that point. So the savings that we would have from getting through and expunging the records of these marijuana dealers incarcerated both in private and public prisons across the United States, the gain of savings would be into the hundreds of million dollar mark. So not only are you dedicating funds from this new substance that is out on the market, which, by the way, I'm just going to quote Jacob Miller here. We sell cigarettes, even though we know what it caused it.
Well, you brought up a very specific that is a huge part of the plan, and that is the fact that if there are privatized prisons, this is not a benefit to them. You were talking about taking away their base profits because they get paid per prisoner. So, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of to happen. I don't want any prisoner to ever go free if their business is prisoners.
You know, I hate to say how accurate you are, but you're pretty accurate here. What's going to happen is these private prisons are going to come up and be like, well, we get a per capita fee from the state, a little tax incentive, a little knockoff, a little payment per prisoner. Mm-hmm. You're going to free up to a third of our profit? I mean, prisoners?
Yes.
How much resistance to getting rid of, I mean, expunging completely, just take it open in the cells and saying, you know what, we made a mistake, leave. No, no, you don't owe us anything. We're done. Your record's clean. No felony. Just go to work. You're out. Like, how hard is it to get that moment to happen when the guy standing at the door says, let me tell you how much I paid to build this facility in your state?
Yep.
So how likely are we to get these previous records expunged with the lobbyists of the private prison system in play?
It's very unlikely. They work like pit bulls at what they do. It is their job to keep their clients in a profitable place. And unfortunately, we live in a good capitalist society where if we don't give some incentive to do good, people might not think that they're doing good enough.
Ooh. But what is good enough when it comes to these new laws? I mean, like I said, Illinois is going full adult use legal. This is a brand new dynamic introduced into the whole debate.
It's great that they just jumped the fence and went full, like, you know, they went swimming rather than, you know, trying to dip their toes like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is, though, is because they jumped, they've cannonballed, and now everybody around the pool of this whole legislation movement is going to get a little splashed from Illinois. Could states actually feel pressured because of the precedents that Illinois is going to set?
I don't think the state will feel pressure, but our politicians all play a very close game of who's it, what's it, and what's popular right now. And I feel like this could just be another trend. You know, if you jump on this bandwagon at the right time, this could be the reason why you do get to be the governor of wherever the place is you've been trying to move up in.
Oh, yeah. Because when it comes to Pritzker and his run at the Illinois State House, he was completely on board from day one of being out there saying, you know what, we're going to change the laws because the laws are stupid, the laws are bad, and they cost our state millions. In a world where only conservatives are allowed to own fiscal responsibility, the fact that a Democratic governor is making this decision because of the fiscal savings,
mm-hmm.
Could conservatives, I mean, even though John Boehner leads a national group that is a cannabis lobbying group now, former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, but with that scenario out there, GOP has always been anti. With a Democrat coming forward and saying, no, no, this is financial. This will make and save my state money. Will the GOP now feel pressured to say, okay, screw the dogma, we've got to go with the numbers?
I would think so. We live in a good capitalist society, right? So if that's where we really live at, then that's exactly how they should act. But, you know, emotions tend to outweigh good intentions and the actual job they're supposed to do sometimes. And I think the emotional gut reaction is just going to be to say no in a very special way for a while. And then, like I said, hopefully it will come into vogue and people will change their minds and start doing different things.
Well, this is the thing, though. It's not gone vogue in other states. We still have Colorado. We still have California with prisoners. We still have places like even D.C. that are wrestling with prior convictions on the books versus the new law of the land and why these two things aren't meeting up. The thing that really kind of gives somebody a headache at night, and I'm just going to throw this out there, could at the end of the day, marijuana laws be more institutionalized racism?
Yes, absolutely. No. And it's an easy play. We started in the earlier part of this conversation with Richard Nixon and his direct aim at people of color in instituting these things. And we all know that the bad smells flow downhill and it's still flowing. You know, he dumped over a bucket. It's just rolling really slow.
Because this is the thing that really gets me. even in Hawaii, when we went to the medical marijuana dispensary act, you know, mm-hmm. before we just had medical marijuana, you have to grow what you grow, and that's all you know. Now we have dispensaries. To get into that lottery, because each county only was allowed a certain amount of dispensaries, to get into that lottery, you had to show upwards of $3 million in capital investment.
Wow.
At what point is that accessible to somebody that just wants to be a good old, come up, pull yourself by the bootstraps America and start from the ground?
Well, I mean, the comic in me really wants to tell you that, you know, we're old guys, dude. $3 million ain't that much money no more, player. You make that sound like that was a lot of money. That's not a lot of money.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize that Jay-Z had jumped into the show.
You know, us broke people, yeah, that's not, we're like, how would you get that? That's almost impossible to obtain. To a lot of people, that's two more phone calls. I have some, you have some, and Chris, you know, Christy has some. Now we all have some. That's $3 million.
You know, the thing about your logic, and I mean, we've got like 20 seconds here before the break. The thing about your logic is, that's the way that the people with the money talk.
Exactly.
It's not the way people that need the money talk. we'll take a quick break and come with more news and hopefully better news. Up next, it's the Shaggy Chicken Show. Yeah, Shaggy Chicken Show.
Is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. And if you missed any part of the first part of the show, we talked about weed, man.
So much.
But it was actually a very intellectual discussion. And if you missed it, check out the archive of this show just by searching on iHeartMedia, Spotify, iTunes. Look, we're literally everywhere. Just search for the Shaggy Jenkins Show on your favorite service or find us at our website, shaggyjenkins.com. That would be me, the host of this show, and of course, joining me from California, Mr. Friday Love. Now, we have a big kind of debate to talk about because this is one of those things that, I want to ask you because you're in California. Of course, we in Hawaii, we will never encounter what a border wall is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Pacific Ocean, the largest body of water in the solar system, is our border. California is one of those places that does have detention centers, not as notorious as the ones in Texas, but detention centers nonetheless. Can I ask you a very simple question?
Mm-hmm.
Are these detention centers built with the intention of keeping people in or as acting as halfway houses while people wait through an immigration process?
They seem to be built more based upon prisons to me than a pausing station or a transfer station. When you put somebody someplace and don't have an insight for when they're supposed to leave, it isn't a transfer station.
It does seem kind of prison-like at that point, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, That's a frightening scenario for an adult, just ending up in a room and all of a sudden being told, well, you live here now. That's frightening for an adult. Could you imagine this scenario if, say, you were 9 years old?
No, I could not imagine it at all. And the fear and the results that I see on television of children who've been separated from their parents, even for a short amount of time, and then who are reunited with their parents, and their parents are awestruck at their kids not speaking anymore, not being as emotionally attached as they were before. You would think they would be, oh, I'm back with my parents, everything is fine. But they're suffering from PTSD. These kids are never going to be the same after this experience.
Now, keep in mind, when we say PTSD, we don't just mean the shock of being removed from their parents in a foreign country where you don't speak the language and none of your handlers actually speak your language. You're given very little information and you sleep on a floor made of concrete inside of a steel cage that usually houses animals. Not exactly the most summer campy experience, would you say?
No, not at all.
Remember when Kellyanne Conway said these places are like summer camp?
Well, my summer camp had soap, restrooms for everyone, a bed for every single individual who came to camp, no exceptions. Mm-hmm. There was a nurse on duty who actually cared. They gave us food, and I could call my mama.
Oh, yeah, you could call your mom. And here's the amazing thing. I bet that there was a surprising lack in your summer camp experience of death and sexual assault.
Yes, it was really, really not happening at all.
You know, that sounds more like summer camp. No sexual assault, no death, the ability to call and contact your parents, beds provided for you, actual bed, and of course, some sort of fun activity that was supposed to get you through the day. In a scene that looks like a dystopian child factory, these dog kennel cages that are surrounding these kids are in big concrete warehouses where there's a television playing Finding Nemo somewhere in the cold distance and very little else in the way of activity. It seems kind of odd that this is the kind of place that we've set up. Oh, and by the way, even though we set these places up, it's still very much more odd that Representative Ocasio-Cortez can't even call them what they are, by definition, concentration camps without causing a huge backlog.
Well, my whole thing, I understand we're doing wrong and that you know, this is the effect of people coming across the border, blah, blah, blah. My question is, where are our stand-up businesses? Where's the Ronald McDonald House in all this? I know for a fact that Ronald McDonald House and the Goodwill could provide games to every institution in the country if that's what they wanted to do.
They're barred from by the federal government. Now, keep in mind that the current administration policy is, and certain state, thank God not California, but other mm-hmm. states are considering legislation that makes it illegal to help somebody in need if they are not a naturalized or natural-born United States citizen. In other words, if you go by somebody in the desert, say Arizona, and you notice that somebody doesn't speak the language, kind of coming through dehydrated, maybe a little bloody from the sun and the distance, the briars, the underbrush, if you were to even ask that person, are you okay? You know, considering if you actually could speak Spanish, mm-hmm. that itself is a prosecutable offense.
That's not a place I want to live.
No. But here's the latest. When it comes to those child prisons, the ones that, by the way, surprising amount of prison-like activity and sexual assault. Oh, and a very high number of mysterious deaths. But it's summer camp to the GOP. These institutions, when it comes to, about talking about it, the Border Patrol basically sees about 2,000 kids in one of the most crazy PTSD-inducing environments. But the head of the department, well, the acting head of the Department of Homeland Security basically said, no, there's no locks on the doors. If these kids don't like the way that they're getting treated, they can just walk out. First off, is that a factual statement?
No, they can't just walk out. What 9-year-old do you know looks at their surroundings, assesses it, and decides they need to be somewhere else without an adult supervision or adult help? None. And none of those people who said that would let their 9-year-old make that decision. They would never put their 9-year-old in a position to make those decisions. It's horrible that they would say those things out loud. Like, that just shows their indifference to these people and that they don't feel like they're real human beings. They feel like they're something other.
You know, I know yesterday was Windrush Day, which if you don't know what Windrush Day is, once again,
look it up.
But as long as we're talking about forced capturing of children and stuff, I want to kind of parry this with something that happened in Australia a long time ago with Aboriginal children. Now, legend goes, and I don't have the name at my hand, but one of the Aboriginal children, a girl by the age of 9, had decided she had had enough of the colonizers' concentration camp. She walked some 200 miles across the Australian outback. Oh, and at the beginning decided to turn around and go get her brother and sister out of the camp, too.
Yes.
All three children walked 200-something miles to reunite with their family. Get this. As awe-inspiring as that story is, oh my God, these three children survived the rigors of the Australian outback. For days on end, making a 230-something mile journey to reunite with their parents. We shouldn't have ever set up the situation that story should have been inspired by to begin with. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. And I'm actually pretty sure they walked that distance twice.
Yeah.
Because they went back, they got captured, they broke out again, and walked the fence again.
Yeah. They got all the way back to their village and were taken all the way back to the school. And they broke out again. But once again, that is a tale that it should not have existed because we should have never had the conditions set up for that to happen. But it's a precedent.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened in Texas, in a place like Arizona, in any one of these border states, what happened when one kid walks out these supposedly open doors and crosses back into Mexico and tells them what happens? The question that we have to ask ourselves, and I'm going to ask this to you. You now represent Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
A very tall Mexico, but Mexico nonetheless.
Hilarious.
As Mexico, the country, one of your young citizens, maybe age 9, has just crossed a very treacherous territory filled with people that could kill them. In the outback, it was, you know, the colonizers. Mm-hmm. In Texas, it's the cartels.
Mm-hmm.
You have wild animals, dingoes in Australia, wolves and other kind of creepy crawlies in Texas and Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
A 9-year-old goes through all of this and shows up and says, "They are keeping us in cages and I escape." As Mexico, what's your official first reaction?
I mean, if I'm Mexico, that's an act of war as far as I'm concerned. You're keeping my citizens as captives in cages, and one of them just came back and told me about it. I'm going to address you as the oppressor and see if I can get my people back.
Now, right now, U.S. diplomats keep telling, you know, people south of the border, "Oh, well, we're just tough. We have a zero policy. You know, you should really keep your criminals to yourself. And oh, by the way, when they get here, just ignore all that stuff in the news about the death, the sexual assault, the isolation and the cages, because that is fake news. That is just political grandstanding by our weird political system. Pay no attention to that, Mexico."
Yeah, and they wonder why people vanish in Mexico all the time.
Right. I hate to say it, but I think those people actually flee sometimes, you know? They come they're walking through the desert, some cartel guy comes up on them with a gun. "What are you doing here? Do you have work?"
Exactly.
I mean, you know, it's like, "I'm American and I'm here for jobs."
I will absolutely take it.
I gotta ask, though, how long can we keep this ruse up?
Well, I mean, I'm in a place in my mind and in a place in what I see in the media in that somebody's going to take more action than nobody. That's what I have to say. I feel like this is going to be short-lived in that, like, it's just going to be a really uncomfortable situation. I don't think it's going to go away instantly. I don't think they're going to change anything about what they're doing. I think people are going to make more and more noise about it, but I don't think there's going to be an actual change for some time to come.
The thing is you might be right, and this is what really gets you. You know, the Trump administration, time and time again, has come forward and said this wasn't our problem to create. This was actually created under the Obama administration. But time and time and time again, I keep looking back and I don't see the actual connection. So Friday, the big question is, Donald Trump's fake version of history, when he talks about these events that, once again, I don't know when they happened because I'm pretty sure they didn't. Why is it that those false histories are the things that our current decisions are based off of?
Because it deflects the honor-bound system of taking responsibility for what you've done. I think it's really interesting that, like, we all know how slow the government moves. So something happens and Donald Trump wants to jump up and say, I did that, I did that. I mean, we all know for a fact that it takes, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 years to effect any change in our government. That being the fact, he's trying to take responsibility for everything that he didn't do and pawn off all the responsibility of things that he did do on somebody else.
And this is the thing, too, because, I mean, we are talking about kids in cages. So let's take this from a non-diplomatic standpoint, because at the end of the day, a lot of Americans, if we sit here and we talk about diplomacy, if we talk about this person, that person, they're not going to really get it. So I just want to boil this down to something simple. Reputation. If you are somebody outside of the United States and you're seeing these stories, especially this latest round of, we don't keep our kids prisoner. No, these facilities in the middle of the desert, miles away from nowhere, that has absolutely 0% survivability by most of the people that are in our systems, those places aren't prisons. They can merely leave whenever they want to. With that being the latest narrative thrown out there, what do you think is the impact on America's reputation?
Well, first off, every pedophile on the planet is going to try and move here because obviously you can just go pick up kids at a detention center and take them home. It's just an example of how little we care about and how little we care about our reputation and these kids that have come over the border and been separated from their parents.
Now, remember, this is a double jeopardy thing, too, because let's say you live near one of these detention centers. With the way that the GOP and conservatives have pushed certain laws, if you see a child in distress and you go to assist that child,
you're going to jail.
So at what point is this not Executive Order 9906 all over again?
This is exactly all over again. And they'll put the Japanese in concentration camps and they'll put Hispanic kids in concentration camps. And if a big wave of Ethiopians came over here, they'd put them in concentration camps too, because they don't care.
No. And let's not forget that not too long ago, we had a bunch of Haitians here that were refugees from a hurricane. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump put them in Guantanamo. Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a prison.
If this is going to be our reputation going forward, what is going to be the impact on the world when it comes to how upstanding they think America is?
Well, I think, unfortunately for us, you know, as Americans, we think we have some reputation to save, and that I think it's been long lost. So they don't have very high expectations at all, and they actually expect us to act this way.
They expect this behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because when you expect that type of behavior, that makes it easy to monetize? You see where I'm going with this?
Probably.
Yeah, because let's just go ahead and throw this little tidbit of information out there. And I'm going to ask you if you know. These child detention centers, who is the actual people running them?
I don't know, but I've heard over and over again that they're severely underqualified and there for the paycheck more than to help anybody or take care of anyone.
Yeah, because they're underqualified. They're not mandated by anybody. And, oh, did I mention that they're private employees? at the end of the day, this whole child prison thing that we're talking about goes back to the marijuana story that we were talking about in the first segment. The same yes. people that are perpetuating the bad system in one are now perpetuating locking up kids because, once again, it's profitable.
It's profitable.
So, look.
So, if you and your buddies have $4 million, you can rent a facility. You can, how should we say, you can pretend to set it up adequately to take care of human beings. You can then get a contract and then run off with $11.5 million and provide $6,000 worth of service.
And maybe an average of 16 kids per facility that just keep disappearing, dying, or getting sexually assaulted.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. I mean, right now, we have about 1,500 kids where we don't even know where their parents are.
I'm sure it's a lot more than that. And like I said, this is a if I'm led to believe any of the things I've heard in the media about how prolific child trafficking is, this is a child trafficker's dream. Those kids aren't vanishing. They're being sold into a system that already existed. And this is feeding that system.
Oh, yeah. Like, right now, I would be out in the desert with my best free puppy's white van because mm-hmm. I know I'm gonna score something. Or am I? Because here's the thing. I've been reading different investigative journalists who have been going mm-hmm. down to these child centers. The reason why is because none of them really reported on whether or not the security of the place was, are the doors barred and locked 24 hours a day, right? That's a problem, because if mm-hmm. something like open door policy was in existence, wouldn't I have heard that from when Vice went down there and found out that the, you know, youngest person that we're keeping is like 8 months, 7 months old?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Separated from their parents. Nobody knows where the parents went. When they did that story, they didn't mention anything about an open door policy. So, quick question. Why are they lying about this open door thing?
You know, the bigger question to me is, why are we even concerned if the doors are quote unquote open or not? Again, these are children. An 8 month old is going to walk out and go where? And eat what? And talk to whom about how to get home? Nowhere. So the fact that they're throwing up this smokescreen just means we should be even more alarmed that they're trying to say that there's any sort of freedom or ability to make change or make a thought based on the fact that you're a kid in a foreign country in a language that you don't speak trying to get home. Ridiculousness.
It's beyond ridiculousness. Now, here's the thing, too. There has been organizations across the United States that have offered to step in and help. And time and time and time again, we refuse that help. Do you think that this is a problem with A, the government basically saying, no, 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 no. This is a fragile situation, so stay away. Or B, this is one of those cases where, no, 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 stay away, because if you start coming in and doing a better job, we lose our government contract.
It's not even the government contract. They stand also to be audited in some way by an outside force. And if anyone really saw, especially think about it, if you let someone in who does what, if you're nursing someone and you're not doing a good job and you let a real nurse come in, they're going to report you. They're going to audit what you did and see how inadequately you've been doing your job, and they're going to say something. That's the real reason why they don't want anybody anywhere near what they're doing.
The limited audits that we have had of these facilities reveal kind of a bleak and scary story. Some places where children are laying out on bare concrete with nothing but one of those aluminum foil space baskets in steel dog cages, while somewhere off in the distance a big screen TV has been rolled in like it's AV day. There's those conditions. There's conditions where some places were serving expired and spoiled food. Then there's case after case after case of no proper sanitation or hygiene regimen for restroom facilities, inadequate preparation of hygienic toiletries, in other words, soaps, toothbrushes, toothpastes, you know, things that kids actually need and depend on adults to provide for them so that they can maintain health and well-being. Those things aren't even being provided.
Of course they're not being provided. They don't care.
So,
like we were talking about camp. When's the last time you went to camp and you didn't have soap when you went to the showers? When's the last time you went to camp and there was no water provided for you? When's the last time you went to camp and there was no food provided for you? As a matter of fact, some of the best food you've ever had in your whole life was at camp.
Right. But this is the thing, too. A lot of times, camp is something that is done in secret. And at the conclusion of World War II, a lot of Germans who swore nothing was going on, these buildings and stuff that were built way in the distance of their towns, nothing was happening there. They're prison camps for prisoners of war. They're being treated humanely and stuff. There was something that was known as Auschwitz Day. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes.
That is where some of the Allied commanders, both UK and US, decided to take all of the people in the surrounding town around the Auschwitz concentration camp and marched them through all of the atrocity. Bodies stacked on top of bodies, open mass graves, gas chambers still filled with the dead, incinerators filled with the remains, box upon box of confiscated teeth, wedding rings, personal items. They made that entire population look unabashed at what they had done. So we've got like 2 minutes left here.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need an Auschwitz Day for these child detention camps? Do you think at the end of Trump's presidency, the next president is going to be like, let's open the doors and see what horribleness we really did?
Wow. We don't do well at turning the camera on ourselves. You know what I mean? We have, like you said, we have this, it's an unjust vision of ourselves that we project onto the rest of the world. So we think they think things about us and they don't. They know we're some lowballers, that we don't try very hard, and if given the opportunity, we'll take the shortest route we possibly can to anything. And mistreating others from other countries, unfortunately, is part of our MO.
It really is. I mean, you know, if you're going to pick a country to pick on, if you're the United States, go for the brown folks, huh?
Yep.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, real quick, where can people find you?
They don't need to find me. They can catch me here on the Shaggy Jenkins Show where I belong.
All right, and we'll see you next time. Till then, love you, mean it. Get in, bye.